Good. Now we're holding on page 128 in Bhavavastra, three lines from the bottom, near the beginning of Oisman Aleph. We were learning about the various directions and the winds that come from them as they have relevance in halacha, as far as the Mishnah had talked about certain things that should or shouldn't be on certain sides of a city in order not to bring objectionable smells or whatever. That led us into the discussion of where the Shekhinah is. Is there one particular direction where we can associate with the Shekhinah more than others, or is there not? And that would be relevant to in which direction we daven. And we talked, and the last thing we learned about is that each of the four winds have different effects on the climate. Some make that there's a drought, some bring showers of rain, etc. So continuing on this topic about the different directions, Olam la'achsadra hu doimer. Rabbi Eliezer says that the world resembles an achsadra. An achsadra is an entryway, a porch, which is closed in on three sides and open on the fourth. So the same way, Rabbi Eliezer learns that the world is like an achsadra of ruach tzfonis, ein misuchechas or misuveves. The north side is not misuchechas, we mean roofed over. In the printed Gemara, it's misuveves, surrounded. In other words, on the face of it, Rabbi Eliezer is saying, as the Gemara is going to go to talk about, that it means he's saying that there's no rakia, there's no sky on the north side of the world. So it's surrounded, so the world is surrounded by the heavens, by the sky on three sides, but open on the fourth side. We'll talk about soon different other explanations and different symbolisms that Mephoshim talk about this. There's by the way, a medrash that makes the point that Hashem, according to Rabbi Eliezer, at least Hashem created the world that way, kind of incomplete, so that, for example, if Goyim will claim, well, we could create a world ourselves, who needs Hashem? So we tell them, let's start by seeing if you can close up the fourth side. So we'll talk about soon various symbolisms in it. Now on the face of it, the Gemara is talking over here about the sky and how it surrounds the earth. One possibility, though, also is Rabbi Eliezer may mean in the sense of how the continents are distributed. You have these continents to the east and west. You have an Atlantic and a Pacific Ocean, and on each side of them you have continents. There's Antarctica to the south, but there's no continent in the north by the North Pole. So that also represents the idea like the world is not fully filled in and complete over there. It talks about in a lot of places. The north represents the side of Koichas Atumah. You have the Lashon HaPasuk Mitzofen Tipasach Hara. From the north, the evil will break forth. So therefore, there's also this idea that Hashem made the world, so to speak, incomplete and leaves it up to us. It is, in fact, our job to close up that fourth side, that north side, and make the world into a proper Judah B'tachtonim. Anyway, Rabbi Eliezer is saying that the world is. Rabbi Eliezer is saying again that the world resembles an achsadra. It's not roofed in or covered up on that fourth side. So when the sun reaches the northeastern corner, so the sun rises in the east and sets in the west, and during the summertime in particular, you have the sun is. The sun traverses most of the west side, and it rises in the northeast and sets in the northwest. So when the sun comes to the northwestern corner, and on the face of it, so if there's no rakia over there, then what is there? Why don't we see the sun at that point? Rabbi Eliezer says nifpefes va'olah l'mayla min rakia. At that point, it turns a corner and goes above the rakia. So in other words, therefore, you don't see the sun at that point because the rakia does hide it from us. But since there's no rakia on the north side, Rabbi Eliezer is saying, then therefore it's because the sun is traveling above it. Rabbi Yeshua says the world resembles a tent. So the whole thing is surrounded. There's no open side, says Rabbi Yeshua. The north side is just as much closed off and roofed over as the other side. So why don't we see the sun when it's in the north? We're talking, of course, in the northern hemisphere. When the sun reaches the northwestern corner, we don't just mean the northwestern corner. This is on a summer's day, we'd be talking about that, the northwestern corner, because that's where the sun sets. Different other times of the year, we'd be talking about various other places along the west side. Anyway, he says, Rabbi Yeshua says that the sun then goes behind the kippah. So Rabbi Eliezer is saying that it goes above the Rakia. Rabbi Yeshua is saying that it goes out through like a window in the sky and goes behind it. Shenemar, and Rabbi Yeshua says, as you find, a pasuk that refers to the sun going in all those directions. In Kehelas, it says, Hulech al Doron, the sun goes to the south, the Sovev al Tsofen, and it turns towards the north, and the pasuk continues, Sovev, Sovev, Hulech al Ruach, the wind, in the simple sense, Ruach means the wind, but here the Gemara is taking it to mean the path of the sun, so Haruach, in other words, means the direction, like Ruach Tzfonis, Ruach Ma'arovis, etc., it would mean the direction. So the pasuk continues, Sovev Holecha Ruach, it goes around and around the directions, Vasvivosev Shavah Ruach, and it comes back around from the directions. So Rabbi Yeshua explains, Holecha Dorim Bayon. So it goes towards the south by day. And therefore, that's called traveling, hiluch, because it's within the visible universe, within the visible sky, and we see the sun in the south in the middle of the day. But it turns towards the north. So Rashi points out when it's in the north and we can't see it, then we can call it that it's Soviv, it's turning over there and it's turning and it's going out of sight. So therefore, Rabbi Yeshua says, you see that, it's not just that it turns in that direction, it actually goes above, it actually goes behind the kippah and therefore it's invisible to us. When the pasuk continues, Sovev Sovev Holech Haruach Vasvivosev Shava Ruach, when the pasuk continues, it goes around in the directions, it goes around to all the directions and turns around and comes back from the directions. Elupnim Mizrach Umayrav, that refers to the east and west sides. Shapam Misabavton, sometimes the sun circles them, but out of our view, namely during the winter time when the sun rises in the southeast and sets in the southwest, and it barely traverses any of the eastern or western horizons at all. So then, where is the sun during that time? It's also behind the kippah, says Rabbi Yeshua. Therefore, it's Sovev, it's turning, but it's out of our view. Upon Mahalachta, and then during the summertime instead, it's Mahalachta, and it's going on a path that's visible to us, because during the summertime, the sun rises in the northeast and sets in the northwest, and therefore it traverses most of the east side, most of the eastern horizon, and most of the western horizon, and we see it. And that's called Mahalachta, that it travels in that direction. First of all, Marsha points out that the Gemara mentions in Pesachim a machlokus between the Chachme Yisrael and Chachme Umas Ha'olam about where the sun goes at night. The Chachme Umas Ha'olam say that by day it goes above the Rakia and by night it goes below the Rakia and therefore it's invisible to us. And the Chachme Yisrael say that it goes the other way around. By night it goes above the Rakia. So now, Sir Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua's opinions reflect respectively the opinions of the Chachme Umas Ha'olam and the Chachme Yisrael. In fact, the Maharsha points out, the Gemara says over there in Pesachim, that at least according to the straightforward understanding of the Gemara over there, the Gemara says that the Rebbe says over there, we can prove that the Chachmei Umas Ha'olam are correct from a certain phenomenon that we see in the world, and therefore, so that would mean, Rabbi Yeshua is saying, well, then in that case, my opinion follows that of Chachmei Umas Ha'olam in that argument of where the sun is, by night. So now the obvious question is that, I mean, the world, you know, the way the Gemara is making it sound, it almost sounds like the world is flat and then surrounded by a dome shape, and then above it is a dome shaped heaven, and then we can talk about what parts of that dome are and aren't there, but the world's not flat, and the sky doesn't work that way, and the path of the sun doesn't work that way. So what's going on over here? So there's a number of different points that are made about it. The Rama wrote a sefer called Torah Sa'ola, where he goes through, and the main thrust in the sefer is to go through the components and the avodah in the Mishkan and the Beis Mikdash and show how they reflect different things in the larger world. In other words, the Mishkan, that he says basically is an Olam Katan. It's a small world. It's a world in miniature representing the world at large. And he has a whole sefer explaining that and on the basis of different points in Chakira. So in the back of the Ein Yaakov over here, there's a long excerpt from that sefer where he talks about this Gemara, and he explains basically the Gemara knows good and well that the sun moves in a circular path that takes 24 hours, and when we don't see the sun, it's because it's set below the horizon, it's because it's over some other part of the world, and it's out of our view. What the Gemara is saying over here, though, is that you can look at it as what, how do we look at that? How do we look at the sun's daily orbit then? Do we look, when it's out of view in the north, do we look at it that it's gone from our view, and it's like a, from our point of view, it's like it's not in the world, or is it there and it's in a place where we can't see? And he talks about that the idea of it is that this way, for example, you have various nations that worship the sun throughout history. So like this, knowing that the sun sets at some point and there's a certain point when it's out of our view helps refute them. If the sun was really a god like they thought, then it should always be visible. That was how Avraham Avinu started discovering Hashem after all. So he explains that there's not really a machlokas between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. They're just phrasing it differently, this point that the sun is sometimes out of view, and that shows how the sun is not the boss of anything, and Hashem makes it go on its daily path. The Maharal has also a whole symbolic explanation of it in his times, as I've mentioned in the shiur before, there was a yid named Rabbi Zalia Min HaDomim, a yid lived in Italy. He was a rav in a couple of communities over there. He at one point wrote a sefer called Imre Bina, where he argued about a number of such gemaras that Chazal didn't really know modern science, or at least whatever was modern science in Rabbi Zari's times, the 1500s. And so what? Okay, listen, you know, we don't go to the Gemara to learn science. We go to the Gemara to learn halacha and so on and so forth. And if they got the science wrong, big deal, so be it. The Maharal didn't like that at all and wrote a whole sefer called Be'er HaGoyla to refute Rabbi Zaria and to explain that when the Chachamim talk about such things, they're talking the symbolism of it. And so he talks about the idea, in other words, that again, the north being complete or incomplete refers to the fact that Hashem created the world that Hashem created the world in a way that we have what to work on it, and the sun being out of view, and then the sun being above the sky or below it. He has a whole explanation basically that Rakia for this purpose does not mean the visible sky. It means the dividing line between Ruchnius and Gashmius. So we can talk about there's a certain time of day when the sun is visible to us, and then it's in our Gashmiistic world, so to speak, below the Rakia, and then you have a time when it's out of our view, and then you can say it still exists, it's still over some other part of the world, but from our point of view, it's from Ma'ilam and Arakia, it's in a spiritual world rather than a physical one. And then you have various Mephoshim also talk about, again, the idea that the north represents the Yetzer Hara, and talking about whether the sun traverses it or goes behind it or whatever represents different strategies for dealing with the Yetzer Hara, and so on and so forth. The Gemara continues with quoting the Braisa. Who Hoya Omer, he used to say, and the Gemara interjects, who's the he? Asan Rabbi Eliezer. The following statement comes from Rabbi Eliezer. Up until we had Rabbi Eliezer's opinion that the world was like an achsadra, and by the way, it's brought in that connection. There's a, for one thing, the first letter of the Torah is a beis, which resembles an achsadra. It's closed on three sides and open on the fourth, representing then this opinion that the world is incomplete on one side, kind of. Anyway, so we had Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, then we had Rabbi Yeshua's opinion. Now, when the Braisa is going to continue, Hu HaYomer, so the Gemara says, Asan LaRabbi Eliezer, the following part of the Braisa is going to be Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, that the world is like an achsadra. He quotes a pasuk from Iyov. This is part of we learned in the first parak about Iyov and his friends. We learned at one point there was a guy named Elihu who came and gave Iyov and gives and speaks to Iyov for several chapters trying to get him used to the idea that Hashem runs the world and we don't always necessarily understand how it works. Elihu has a long part where he talks to Iyov about the greatness of Hashem in bringing rain and how unexpected it is many times, and we see from that the greatness of Hashem. So the pasuk says the pasuk goes like this: Min acheder tovay sufa, from the inner chamber comes the storm wind. So the Gemara interjects. So Rabbi Eliezer interjects: Zuruach droimus, that refers to the south wind from which storm winds come. When the pasuk continues, umi mizorim kora, and from mizorim comes cold. So he says, zuruach tzvonis, that those words in the pasuk are referring to the north side. Mizorim would mean the open side. Rashi explains, mizorim is related to the word muzeres, and which means open. So since Rabbi Eliezer is the one who says that the north side is open, therefore, if the pasuk is saying the cold comes from there, and that would refer to the north, then it means that Mizorim, so Mizorim means the open area, so therefore we see that the north is open, he says. Then the pasuk continues. The next pasuk continues. Minishmas keil yiten korach. From the breath of Hashem, he gives forth. So Rabbi Eliezer explains, Zuruach Maravis. Those words in the pasuk are referring to the west wind, which also in Eretz Yisrael, in those parts of the world, it brings moisture from the Mediterranean, and therefore it kind of, and in cooler weather, it brings frost and cold. The roich of my mutzak, and he finishes off, and an expanse of water in a torrent, Zuruach Mizrachis, that refers to the east wind, which brings heavy rains. So the Gemara asks, what do you mean? Didn't we say earlier, when we talked about the pasuk from Hazinu, Yarav Kamata Litchi, we said that it's the east wind, we said that it's the south wind that brings showers and causes the grasses to grow. Now you're telling me that it's the east wind that does that. So that's Rashi's explanation. Tosfos says rather the question is a little bit different. The question is that here we're saying that from the south wind comes sufa, which are storm winds, like hurricanes. Whereas before we were saying that the south wind brings gentle rains. So the answer is exactly that. Like Kasha, hold the Asher Mitru Benichusa, hold the Shlichusa. It depends whether the rain is coming gently or in a torrent. So the pasuk from Hazinu is referring to normal rains. When they come as a result of the south wind. But here, our pasuk and Iyov are talking about when there's a heavy storm wind. So that comes, so either, as the pasuk is saying, a huge downpour comes from the east side, or, as Maharsha says, even within the south wind itself, sometimes you have when it comes in a torrent, Menacheder Tovei Sufa, there comes a storm wind, there comes a hurricane. When there's exceptionally strong rains, those can also come from the south as well. Next, Omer of Chista, my dichtiv mitzofen zohav yase. In that connection, in Elihu's speech, he says, a few psukim later, he says, gold comes from the north. So what does that mean? So zuruach tzfon is from azelas zahav. This refers to the north wind, which causes gold to flow. In the sense, we learned before, that the north wind clears away the clouds and makes there's going to be less rain. Less rain means there's going to be a drought. A drought means that people are going to have to spend more money for food, and therefore it causes gold to flow out of people's pockets. Marshall learns a little differently. It means also, so in other words, according to that, the word mazelas is meloshen nozal, which means to flow. Marshall explains it can also be meloshen zoil, as in cheap, as in because of that, you end up having that, certain people end up having a lot of gold because again, there's a rise in prices, and therefore those who are seems Maharshah actually understands the other way around. It seems like Maharshah understands that Adraba, the north wind, brings plentifulness, and therefore like now gold is more cheaply available because now people have more resources. As we see, the word zolim is used in connection with gold. A pasuk describes those who have gold flow from their pockets. In context, the pasuk is talking about goyim who spend huge amounts of money to make themselves idols. But we see, in other words, that the word zilusa, Maharsha says, so we see that the word zilusa, to treat it casually, can be used in connection with gold. And so therefore, that would be the result of the north wind. What exactly is Rav Chista wanting to prove over here? So there's a sefer of Chidushim on the Babas called Kos HaYeshuas from one of the Rabbonim of Frankfurt in the early 1700s named Rav Shmuel Shaftin. He explains that Rav Chista's point is, you might have thought that when the pasuk says Mitzof and Zohav Yaseh, gold comes from the north. It sounds like it's a good thing. It sounds like from the north a good, nice amount of gold comes. But Fakert, he's saying that on the contrary, it causes that prices, at least according to Rashi, that prices rise and people end up having to spend a lot more money on food. Next, the Gemara continues. Omer Rafram by Papa Omer of Chista. Miyom Shechora Beis Mikdash. Ever since the Beis Mikdash was destroyed, Loi Hugshema Ruach Duraimis. The south wind has not borne rain. Like this, we said before that the south wind will usually bring good showers of rain that help the plants grow. But ever since the Beis Mikdash was destroyed, we don't have that anymore. So dichtiv, as the pasuk says, "Vayigzer al yomin v'roiv." The pasuk says, "Hashem decreed upon the right." And we talked about yesterday, directions in Tanakh are usually given with reference to the east. You're facing east, and that's called the front, which is why east is also called kedem, which means the front. And then the north and south are respectively the right and left, and the west is the back, as we learned yesterday. So now, when the pasuk says Hashem decreed upon the yamin, upon the right, the roiv, and there's hunger, then the yamin means the south side. So that means, in other words, there's no longer those good showers of rain from the south side. And we don't have that anymore, and instead there's hunger. By Yerchal al Smurl, and the pasuk continues, he eats and consumes to the left, meaning to the north, below Saveu, and they're not satisfied. So in other words, you see that the pasuk is saying that Hashem caused that instead of from the south there are coming bountiful rains, instead there's a drought, instead there's dryness and a lack of food coming from that. And we find a pasuk where we see that the word yamin means the right, means the south. Sofen v'yomin, not the brosim. The pasuk says, Hashem, you created the north and the yamin. So yamin would mean the south then, because it's in opposition to the north. So we see that yamin is the south side, and we see that v'roiv, we see that there's hunger associated with that. In other words, Tosfos points out, in other words, that if it weren't for this proof from Tzof and V'yomin, you could say maybe the Yamin and Smol in the first pasuk from Yeshaya are referring to a person's own right and left sides. How do we know it means the right and left of the world at large? For that, we need the second pasuk. Also, Tosfos goes on to say that, listen, from the first pasuk, we could see that the south is called Yamin. We wouldn't know the other way around that Yamin is called the south. So therefore we need both pesukim. Marsha explains something over here, Derech Tzachos, on this, like a cute vertical on it. He brings like this. There's a pasuk in Kehelas that says, "Oyev kesef lo yisvak kesef." A person who loves money is never going to be satisfied with money. Now, in Poshut Pshat, it means exactly what it sounds like. You have people who are greedy for every little bit of money they can get, and it's never enough for them. The Medrash says, actually, in a positive sense, it refers to tzaddikim who never consider that no matter how many mitzvahs they have, it's never enough for them. And it brings us the example Moshe Rabbeinu. But here, Marsha says like this. There's a famous story. There's a famous Goyish legend of a king who asked that he should be able to always have gold. Everything he touches should turn to gold. So Marsha says that Marsha instead says the correct version of it is that he wanted that everything should be silver. But now the problem is that now he comes to eat and he touches the food and it becomes silver and he can't eat it. So what's he going to do? So therefore he has nothing to eat. So Oyev Kesef, this guy, he loves money, he loves silver. Lo yisvak kesef, he's not going to be able to fill up with the silver because he can't eat it. In the same way over here, in other words, when Hashem causes that on the Yamin, on the right side, in the south, there's no rain, then there's going to be a famine. What about the rich people? They're going to come by Yerchal al Smol. They're going to come to eat from the north, from the north side where gold comes. Well, v'lo yisaveu, they're not going to be satisfied because they can't eat gold. So in other words, in short, ever since the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, and we don't have that rainy south wind, then therefore it causes trouble for everybody, both those who can't afford food and the rich people who can well afford it. But what do they have? They just have, there's a lot of money, but they can't eat money. The Gemara continues. Ever since the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, lo yodu geshamim, ein geshamim yod, ein geshamim yodim, me'otzer toiv. The rain does not come from Hashem's good treasury. In other words, we have rain, but it's not from Hashem's good treasury. It's almost like grudgingly Hashem gives it. There's an expression, Masech Tainis, along the same lines that ever since the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, the rain, the Gemara calls it a tzimukim, which means literally like raisins, like you have. Sometimes it comes, sometimes it doesn't. You don't have it as in the expected way that you did before. As the pasuk says, Yiftach Hashem l'cha esei tzarei atoiv. Hashem will open up for you His good storehouse, and the pasuk continues, Losis mitar adzecha beitoi, to give the rain for your land in its time. So Bizman Shi Yisrael Osin and Sona Shamakim, when the Jewish people are doing what Hashem wants, or Shruyim Ba'artsam, or Yisrael Shruyim Alan Mosim, and they're living in their land in Eretz Yisrael, then Yiftach Hashem Lachai, say Tzorei Atov, and so then Yiftach and Yodim, Eretz Atov, then the rain comes down from the good storehouse of Hashem, and Hashem gives it generously and willingly. Or Bizman Shi Ain Shruyim Ba'artsam, when the Jewish people are not in Eretz Yisrael, or Bizman Shi Ain Yisrael Shruyim Alan Mosim, Ain Gishomim Yodim, Eretz Atov, the rain doesn't come from the Eretz Atov, especially because the Gemara tells us in Tainis, what happens is Hashem first gives rain to Eretz Yisrael, and then, like everybody else, gets the leftovers. So if the Jewish people are not in Eretz Yisrael, then they're only getting the leftovers, and the rain is first falling or barely falling on Eretz Yisrael, and then all we get is the leftovers of that. So now you have the various yusois in the Gemara over here with the parenthesis and the square brackets over here as far as whether the Gemara is saying what's needed in order for the rain to be coming from Otsa Toy, just that the Jewish people are Osin Ritzon Nishamakim, or also does it have to be that they're living in Eretz Yisrael? So in fact, Agoris Habach takes out the Osin Ritzon Nishamakim. He just has Yisrael Shurim Alad Masam, that it's just the Jewish people are living in Eretz Yisrael, automatically then rain will come from Otsa Toy. But Marusha says that no, actually what it means is, listen, we have in V'hoyim Shemaya, if we don't do what Hashem wants, then if we don't do what Hashem wants, V'atzeh Hashemayim, V'lo Yemata, then there won't be rain. So what we're saying is, though, when the Jewish people are, so when the Jewish people are living in Eretz Yisrael and Osim Ritzon Nishamakim, then we have the rain comes from Otsa Toy. If we're not doing Ritzon Nishamakim, then rain doesn't fall at all, V'atzeh Hashemayim, V'lo Yemata. But even if Ritzon Shamakim, if we're not living in Eretz Yisrael, then again, the rain doesn't come from Otsa Toy, because then it only comes from the leftovers of what comes from Eretz Yisrael. That's how Marshall learns the piece of Gemara over here. Continuing on the topic of the directions, and we talked about before about the question, which direction should a person daven in? So we had one opinion that said that a person should daven towards the west, no matter where he is, because as we said, the Shekhinah is primarily in the west. We had another opinion that said you can daven in whatever direction you want. We had, for example, Rav Sheshis telling his Mishoris to stand me up to daven in any direction except for the east, and only because the Minim daven towards the east. But now the Gemara continues, getting back to this topic of what direction a person should daven in. Omer Rabbi Yitzchak, HaRotzeh Lo Hischakim or Shiyachkim Yadrim. If a person wants to be wise in Torah, then when he's davening Shemoneh Esrei, he should be facing towards the south. V'Shiyis Asher, if a person wants to become rich, Yaspin, then he should turn towards the north. I once heard somebody said a Gleich Vertel on it. This is why you have so many Jews in South Africa are rich, because of necessity they daven towards the north, towards Eretz Yisrael. The Simanach, the way to remember it is Shochan Batsofen and Minerva Badarim. The Shochan and the Mishkan and the Beth Mikdash was on the north side, and the Shochan represents riches, as you have the expression Shochan Malachim. And the Minerva, the light of the Minerva, is on the south side, and the light of the Minerva, the Minerva was on the south side of the Mishkan and the Beth Mikdash, and the light of it represents the light of Torah. So those are the directions. Those are the directions a person should face. We're going to talk about soon that the fact is we're supposed to dive in towards Eretz Yisrael. So how do we do it? But first, Marshall points out like this. Basically, we said that showers of rain, which cause the plants to grow, and ultimately for a person to have food to eat, comes from the south. On the other hand, we said mitzafen zahav yaseh, gold comes from the north. So if a person doesn't care to earn a fortune, he just needs enough that he should be able to live off on, and he wants to be able to spend as much time on Torah, then he's going to face towards the south, which is where, he's going to face towards the south, where bread comes from that. So, on the other hand, but rather than the gold, but if a person should yad lahasher, if a person wants to become rich, then he faces towards the side from which gold comes, as we quoted before, the pasuk mitzafen zav yaseh. There's the idea that Dorim represents Chesed and North represents Gvura, so that factors into this as well. Ben Yehoyada has an interesting take on it as well. You know, you have the famous expression in Hayom Yom that's brought in a couple of places and in different variations in Hayom Yom, that when in Gashmias you should always look at the person who's lower than you and be grateful to the Eibishter that you're better off, and Beruchnias you should always look at somebody higher than you and try to aspire to be like him. And they're different. That's one place, one piskim and Hayom Yom, and a different one on the first day of Rosh Chodesh Tammuz, which actually happens to be my birthday. Then you have a one where Alter Rebbe says to a certain Avrich, he says that Gashmius and Ruchnius are polar opposites, and in Gashmius to be a Sameach Bechelka is the best thing, whereas in Ruchnius it's the worst thing. Anyway, so Ben Yehoyada, building on that, he says then also north can represent up, and south represents down, like on maps. So therefore, the idea is if a person wants to be wise in Torah, yadrim, then he should be looking, he says the other way around, south is up and north is down. So if he wants to be yachkim, yadrim, he should be looking upward towards the south, towards the people who are greater than him, to try to be like them. V'shiyashir, as far as riches, yatzbin, by all means, let him look at the ones who are below him, and not worry how much he doesn't have, realizing that there are other people who have a lot less than he does.
And based on what, does he turn the map around?
I don't remember, but yeah, maybe. I mean, the fact is, you know, like we were saying before, usually in Tanakh and in the Gemara, usually directions are given with reference to the east. So where he gets punked that north and south have those connotations. I don't remember. So the Gemara continues, Rabbi Shurban Levi Amar La'olam Yadrin. Rabbi Shurban Levi says, never mind possibly facing in one direction or the other, depending what you want. Always face towards the south. Always look to try to get more chochmah. So, when a person becomes wise, misasher, then automatically with that will come riches. Shenema, as the pasuk says about the Torah, Odach Yomim Bimina, length of days, long life, is in the right hand of the Torah. Bismola, and in the left of the Torah, Oshav Chavod, is wealth and honor. Meaning the Gemara explains elsewhere, it has to do with whether a person is learning Torah, Lishma, or Shaloi Lishma. But in other words, a real chacham, Mal Shor explains, would be satisfied with what he has. Ezu Asher Sameach B'Chelkei. So now then. It really depends. The Smoy Law, not on the left, not on the north in general, but the left of the Torah. So in other words, when a person is willing to make do with a little bit, pass Melach Torah, etc., or that he's learning Torah Shalom Lishma, then he'll get Oshav B'Chavid from it. So that would be the idea. In other words, that Rabbi Shurban Levi is saying, you always face towards the south, always look to try to get more chokhmah of Torah, and from chokhmah of Torah, depending whether you learn Lishma or Shalom Lishma, then you'll have various things that come out of it. So the Gemara continues, Va'omer Rabbi Shurban Levi, Shinim B'mayrev. Now, what do you mean? Rabbi Shurban Levi is saying that you should face towards the south when you daven. Didn't he say before, earlier in the Sugya, that the Shkina is in the west? So in that case, then you should be facing towards the west when you daven. And the answer is, Dematzdad Atzduti. What Rabbi Shurban Levi means is basically you should be facing towards the west, but face a little bit towards the south, and that way your Yotza also this point that you should face towards the south and be wanting to get more more chokhmah of Torah. I do see over here the point from Ben Yehoyada. He says like this, the symbolism about north and south actually comes from, so we said before, north and south map to right and left. You look at the letters of the Aleph Beis. The Aleph Beis reads from right to left. So therefore, when you have earlier letters in the Aleph Beis are towards the right and later letters are towards the left. Now, if you take the letters lev, representing chokhmah, the heart from which a person has chokhmah, if you go towards the right from those two letters, you have chof and aleph, which spells out the word ach, which means however, and is a mute. Ach and rach always mean a mute. So therefore it means when you're going towards the right, then you're going to be looking at the people, you're lacking something, I'm lacking, I have only ach, I haven't yet reached lev. On the other hand, if you're going towards the left, then you have the letters after lamed and beis, a mem and gimel, which spells out the word gam, which means an increase. Gam is a ribui, so therefore just the opposite. When you're going towards the left, look at the ribui, look at the fact that you have more than what you need, that the Eibishter has given you, and you're not looking for more. So that's the symbolism. He says it right. Okay. What?
Gam
is a, we find often that the word gam is a ribui.
Which word did you use?
From lev. You go one with the letters after lamed and beis, a mem and gimel. There is, incidentally, there's a verse that's attributed to the Levi Yitzchak, the Rebbe's father, it's told that on the day that he was taken to be arrested by the communists, he told over a similar verse to the people around him and explained it a little differently, that it represents, in other words, you have a Levi represents Torah, and Ach and Gam respectively represent taking away from the Torah, or adding to the Torah, that you don't do that. You have to keep the Levi intact and not go to either direction. So going back to over here, Rabbi Shurban Levi is saying that yes, the Shekhinah is in the west. You should basically be diving toward the west, but turn a little bit towards the south as well. So the Gemara continues. You, Rav Ashi, lived in Babel, so you live north of Eretz Yisrael. Adrimu Adrumi, you should be facing south when you daven, because you should always be facing towards Yerushalayim. Now, mind you, Babel is not really due north of Yerushalayim. It's more west than north. But the point is, in other words, you should realize it's not only west. It is. Often in the Gemara, all over the place, they refer to Eretz Yisrael as Ma'arava, the west, because Eretz Yisrael is more or less west of Babel. But Rav Chanina informs him, you should know, that it's also somewhat further north, and keep that in mind and face in that direction when you're diving into. So the Gemara says, the Babel is the tzfonah d'arav Yisrael kaima. How do we know that Babel is the north of Eretz Yisrael? Distim, as the Pasuk says, Hashem tells Yirmiyah, Mitzofen, Tipasach Harah, Akol Yoshvei Aretz, from the north, the evil is gonna open up and break forth against everybody who lives in Eretz Yisrael, meaning in other words, Nebuchadnezzar is gonna come from the north and conquer Eretz Yisrael. So we see therefore that Babel is north, or at least somewhat north of Eretz Yisrael. It's an interesting thing, by the way, that the Gemara is saying, how do we know that Babel is north of Eretz Yisrael? We Balabatish would say, open up a map, look at a map and take a look, or do sightings of the stars, or however they figured out latitude back then. But the Gemara wants a source in Torah, because when you have a source in Torah, then you know it's 100% true. Anything else that we find from observation or whatever, yeah, maybe, maybe not.
I heard a Rashash on the Gemara. It's Sukkah about the Ethiopia.
What about it?
Being closer to Eretz Yisrael than by land, it's further.
Okay.
By sea, it's closer.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow, then to Babel. Ethiopia is closer by land to Eretz Yisrael to Babel than it is by sea to Babel.
Okay.
So, it's short distance by sea, but it, not by sea, I'm sorry, the opposite. Ethiopia is closer by sea to Babel than it is by land.
Right, so what's this got again?
And it's given the title that it's very close.
Mm-hmm.
It's very close, although by land it's a very treacherous journey.
Okay.
Through the Sahara. So the point is that I'm trying to say is the way we measure is not necessarily the way the Gemara looked at it. They were looking at how travels were.
I hear, maybe. Okay, there could be that factor as well. But yeah, okay. The fact is, here we're talking about what direction to face, so it wouldn't matter what the actual routes of travel are from Babel to Eretz Yisrael. We're talking about the actual compass directions. The bottom line is that the post can talk about the final halacha is we do in fact daven in the direction of Eretz Yisrael, and it means, in other words, so for example, when Jews mostly lived in Western Europe, they would daven more or less to the east. As Jews came to Northern Europe, then they have to daven more southward. The Alter Rebbe talks about, for example, living in Ladi and living in Lozhna and Ladi. which are almost due north of Eretz Yisrael, that you have to daven more or less south, but a few degrees off direct south towards the east. After Rebbe mentions in Hilchos Tefillah that basically he discusses it in terms of spherical trigonometry, that it can be calculated. Nowadays you can find websites, for example, where it'll actually show you, it'll plot out for you on a map what your direction is from where you are towards Eretz Yisrael, and therefore which direction you should daven.
There's a app called Alochic Times.
Yeah,
it tells you the exact time when you have to daven and where's the
direction. I mean, within that itself, actually, you have an interesting argument whether you should go according to a compass direction or whether you should go according to a great circle route. Here in New York, for example, if you go in a compass direction to Eretz Yisrael, you are attacking going more or less east and a little bit south. But if you're going in a great circle direction, like the direction that a plane would fly, the shortest route, then you're actually going more or less north. Anybody who's flown direct to Eretz Yisrael knows that you go over the coastline of Canada and all the way up almost to Greenland before you start turning south. So that would be one way of looking at it. And from the Alter Rebbe's wording in Hilchos Tefillah over there, it sounds like he actually holds that way, that you ought to be going according to a great circle route, which would mean that we in New York ought to be davening more towards the north. But nevertheless, that's not the popular opinion. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Ge'ola. Chav Zayin Shvat. Okay, so the Rebbe was talking about in a sicha and in Ekev Nun Aleph that in the time of Mashiach, all the Jewish people will have a complete refuah. Even for example, blind Jews. The Rebbe was talking in that sicha about people who are blind. That was the first time the Tanya had been printed in Braille, and the Rebbe devoted a whole sicha to the topic. As Chazal tell us, the law said, "Lover, the blind will be healed," as the pasuk says, "Oz tpakachna eni ivrim," then the eyes of the blind will be open. Even more than that, in fact, the Medrash goes even further and says Hashem Pekeach Ivrim means that when Hashem comes to heal the world, the first ones he's going to heal are those who are blind. So now, when blind people are not able to see, they have the ability to learn in Braille, but lost it lover, they won't even need that. They'll have full physical sight, and they'll be able to read from normal printed text, just like the rest of us do. Continuing with halachas of tzitzis, since they're called tzitzis, the word tzitzis suggests threads that are separate, like hairs that are separate. The pasuk in Yechezkel says, "Vayikocheni b'tzitzis roishi." Hashem said, the Yechezkel says that Hashem, so to speak, took me by the locks of my hair and brought me to Yerushalayim to see what's going on over there. This was, he wasn't actually brought there bodily, but he was shown in a nevuah as if he was being taken there. So therefore, the threads of the tzitzis have to be separate from one another, and you have to do that before you make the bracha. If a person comes late to shul, and so therefore that's what we do when we put the talus on the shoulder, and we're saying the pesuk in Bochi Nafshi, is during that time is also we're checking the tzitzis to make sure that all the strings are separate and that there's nothing wrong, that no strings are torn off or any of the knots loose or whatever like that. If though a person is late coming to shul and he's going to do that, and it's going to take him, and he's not going to, that'll prevent him from davening with the tzibur, then he doesn't have to separate them. In general, though, every day before the person makes the bracha, he has to check the threads to make sure they're kosher. Because what if a thread broke off? And similarly, also the part that's on the corner, what if one of the threads broke over there? And as we're going to learn in later simanim, many times, if a thread is broken there, then the tzitzis are going to be outright possible. So the Alter Rebbe brings over here in a Kuntres Achron, he brings from Shalos Atrubas Beis Yaakov, who wanted to say that if a person is on a trip and he has only one talus with him, then he doesn't need to check the tzitzis, because what's he going to do? If he finds the apostle, then he's not going to put on the talus at all. So the Shalos Atrubas Beis Yaakov says in that case it's not necessary. The Alter Rebbe says on the contrary. There's no mitzvah to put on tzitzis that are posel. In fact, he'll be saying a bracha batola. So absolutely, even if this is the only talus that he has with him, he should check it even under those conditions. And the Alter Rebbe points out, after all, on Shabbos, you can't fix the tzitzis if they're broken, and yet you're supposed to check the tzitzis. See, just because you can't fix them doesn't mean that you don't have a chiyuv to check them. And then, and the mice said that's what we do. In practice, it's probably a good idea if you're going on a trip someplace, take along extra strings with you and learn how to put on strings. There's actually a Tosfos in Menachos that brings from some place that there are a number of things that every Talmid Chacham should know how to do, and one of them is how to restring tzitzis.